So we are on officially Mem Dalet Amud Beis. I want to make one small ha'ara, which really is on the Gemara from yesterday, but it includes the Gemara for today. Because it's halach lamaiseh, even though it doesn't really have a nafkamina lahalacha, but it's just something everyone should be aware of. When it comes to the principle of our Gemara, if you remember, there was a machlokes amoraim, whether or not Arava is referred to as Nevi'im. What was it? Yesod Nevi'im or Minhag Nevi'im? Is it Yesod Nevi'im or Minhag Nevi'im? Yesod Nevi'im meant it was some sort of takana, and Minhag Nevi'im meant it was just some sort of Minhag. The Gemara concludes by saying that that's not Bezman HaMikdash, or more correctly, in the Beis HaMikdash. That was only outside the Beis HaMikdash or after Churban, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So Bezman HaZeh, when we have this thing that we call a Rava, so is that some kind of Takanas HaNeviim, or is it some sort of Minhag HaNeviim? What's the Nafkamina if it's a Takanas HaNeviim or Minhag HaNeviim? Do you remember what Rashi said? Bracha. Because the only time you can say Asher Kichanu Mitzvah Tzivanu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us in something that's Derabbanan, is when we have to listen to what the Rabbanan said. Said slightly differently. If we don't listen to the Rabbanan, we're violating Lo Yisa Asur. Min HaDavar Asher Yagidu Lecha Yaminu Smol. So since you have to listen to the rabbis, by listening to the rabbis, you're fulfilling, on some level, a mitzvah in the Torah of Lo Yisa Asur, Min HaDavar Asher Yagidu Lecha. That's what Rashi said. So if you're not fulfilling a din de Rabbanan, you're just following a minig, so then you can't say Vitzivanu. Good? So it should come out, according to this Rashi, that any single minhag does not have a
bracha.
Can anybody think of an area that that might be a little complicated? Can you think of a minhag we make a bracha on? So Tosis points out, in this long Tosis, and Dalet Amud Beis, there's a famous one. Gemara tells us that Rav walked into a shul that was not in his hometown, and it was Rosh Chodesh. And everybody was there, I'm sure, Karlbach Nigunim, singing all of the tunes for Hallel. And then all of a sudden, he's like, what's going on over here? What are they doing? Hallel? Why are they singing Hallel? What do you mean? It's Rosh Chodesh. So that's now the days that it was instituted to say Hallel. There are 18 days that Hallel was instituted. All the days, Pesach, Sukkot, there are 18 days, Chanukah, all 18 days altogether. Purim is exception, right? Because Purim, we don't say Hallel because the Megillah is considered like a Hallel according to some different approaches in the Gemara Megillah. Why we don't say Hallel on Purim? Shana, Kippur, it's a Hallel of Yomadin, etc. But at least when it comes to, you've got 7 days of Pesach, you've got 8 days of Sukkot, you've got another 8 days of Chanukah, so you got to work all this out. But apparently there are 18 days that we say Hallel officially. Rosh Chodesh is not one of them. So Rav walked into Shul, and he said, what are they doing? Until they skipped some paragraphs. You know what I'm talking about? You know what we call that? Hallel Bidi... Bidilug. Ledaleg is to skip. Hallel Bidilug means hallel when they're skipping, which is what we do on Rosh Chodesh, right? So that's what there's always in the article, they're grayed out paragraphs because you don't say them on Rosh Chodesh, right? You only say them other times. So certain times when we say hallel proper, and certain times we say hallel Bidilug, that'll work out the 18. Oh, so Rav said, I got it. This is just their minig. Minig abaseichem biyadeichem. I'm not going to say anything because clearly this is their minig. How do you know it's their minig? Because they're not saying officially Hallel because they're skipping around. They're only doing certain things. In other words, they have a certain minig to say Hallel. In other words, tell him. So what's the big question? So when we say Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, is it a din d'rabbanan or is it a minig? It's a minig. Because Rav didn't say it. Rav was like, what are they doing? It's not one of the days instituted to say Hallel. So then he felt it was okay and he wasn't going to say anything once he noticed that they said Hallel b'dilug. Because that meant they weren't actually saying Hallel, they were just doing this minig thing that they had. That was the proof, was that they were skipping around and weren't saying every single paragraph. So halal bedilug is a minhag, not a din derabbanan. So what's the obvious question? Do we say a bracha or do we not say a bracha on Rosh Chodesh when we say halal? So raise your hand if you think we say a bracha on halal of Rosh Chodesh.
Not regular Rosh Chodesh.
Regular Rosh Chodesh, where it is a minhag, because we skip.
Yes, we
skip.
Raise your hand if we say a bracha.
Are you Sephardi?
Got a lot of hands. Raise your hands if there's no bracha. Strange, the Sephardim raised their hands. So there you have it. Ashkenazim make a bracha on halal. That is halal b'dilug, and the shaila is why. So the Rambam, does anybody know the funniest thing? You know the Rambam has all the halachas of halal? Obviously, right? In like Hilchas Yom Tov, right? No. The Rambam has all the halachas of halal in Hilchas Chanukah. Because Chanukah is the Jewish Thanksgiving. So all the halachas of halal, the Rambam places in Hilchas Chanukah. It's a fascinating thing. So the Rambam over there paskins that you don't make a bracha on halal on Rosh Chodesh. And he doesn't explain why. Kedarko b'kodesh, right? The Rambam doesn't give his sources and doesn't always explain things. He says there is no bracha on halal, even if it's b'tzibur. So the Ran comments that he holds, guess what? It's a minik, and there is no such thing as a bracha on a minik, as our Gemara, our Gemara doesn't say, it's really Rashi's interpretation, but that's the nafkamina. The Rambam learned, like Rashi, that there's no bracha on a minik ever. So that makes, you know, Sephardim consistent, right? Very good. What's the excuse for the Ashkenazim? So that's what this Tosfos is all about. This Tosfos deals with Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam's opinion was that the Gemara never meant to imply that we never say a bracha on a minig. It meant to imply that in this case there's no bracha on the minig, because what are you doing? You're just taking a bunch of sticks and picking them up. That's not a significant enough action that it should require some kind of bracha. What are you doing? You just picked up some sticks. But when you're actually saying something, like you're saying halal, well, that's no different than learning Torah. So he thinks that deserves a bracha. It meant a minig that's not significant in its action doesn't get a bracha. I don't know if that sounds like the most convincing thing off the cuff, but in any case, just as a hara, just FYI, so that is that's an issue. Okay. Gemara. Memetal and Mabiz, first line, where it says, Amar Riami. Riami said, a rabbi tzrich a shiur, and a rabbi requires a shiur. Is that a chiddush or not a chiddush? Well, we know a rabbi requires a shiur. We spoke about it, right? Anybody remember the shiur for a rabbi? Three tzvachim. Why would, what? Of course he needs a shiur. It was not a mishnah. Riami, not murder. We don't need him to tell us it's a shiur. What's going on here? Which Arav is he talking about?
The actual
Arav. Not the one in the Lulav, that's the point. And there is not the Aravis that go along with the Lulav. We're talking about the other Aravis now. The Aravis that we have, the Sisoid Nevi'im, the Minig Nevi'im, or the Shalach HaLamoshu Sinai in the Beis HaMikdash. Those Aravis that we're discussing now that have nothing to do with the Lulav, do those Aravis have some kind of Shiur? So that's exactly, we never heard about that. That the Mishnah never discussed. So that's what Rabbi Ami comes to tell us, is that yes, it requires a shiur. By the way, he doesn't say what the shiur is. Ve'en and he tells us, elef ne'atzmo, and it's only taken on its own. What's he trying to say? What do you mean on its own, as opposed to what?
With the lulav.
Ve'en adam yaitzich de'chavas v'arava shem b'lulav. And the person cannot fulfill his obligation with the arava in the lulav. So three halachas of Rabbi Ami. Number one, the Arava requires a shear. Interesting, he doesn't say what it is. Number two, it must be taken on its own. And number three, you can't be Yotze with the Arava that is with the Lulav. Anybody have any question they want to ask on that?
Isn't that what
we do
every year?
Number two and number three are the same thing, no? Number two is you have to take it on its own. Number three is you can't take it with the Lulav. Well, last time I checked, taking it with the Lulav is not on its own. Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're with somebody and you say, listen, I want to be alone. They say, okay. So everybody else leaves except for your best friend. And you look at them and you say, I want to be left alone. He said, well, I don't count, you know, I'm just a lulav, you know. What do you mean? It's the same thing. Okay. Says the Gemara came in the Amar Mahar. Since the master said, Rugami, and he tells Elfiniatsmo that it has to be taken by its own, meaning the literal translation is double negative, right? Ain and Nitellas Ella. It's not taken except. It's only taken. Bivne Atzma on its own. Pshita! Obviously, then I'm yes, we are rubbish of a lulav. It's obvious you're not Yotze with your rubber that is with the lulav. So, yeah, that's obviously redundant. So Gemara explains what he meant. Mahu this same. What is it that he says? Meaning I would have thought, honey, mele, these words, that were only meant that you have to take it on its own when you're only lifting it up once. But let's say you have your lulav and your hadas and rava, esther, whatever. So you have your lulav and your rava. You pick it up once for the purpose of lulav. Maybe if you put it down and pick it back up for the sake of our rava, maybe that's okay. So to pick it up once with a lulav, then it's obvious it's just to be okay in the midst of the arba minim. But if you put it back down, you pick it up a second time, maybe then it is okay to take it with something else. But if you picked it up, put it down, and then picked it up again, then maybe not. Maybe you would be able to take it along with a lulav since it's the second time you're doing it. Come ashmalan, that's what he meant. Teachers, he comes to teach us, no, that's not correct. That doesn't work. In order to be yotzei this minig or din of a rabba, it has to be taken on its own. Okay, that's why it's not redundant. Rechista amar Rabbi Yitzchak. No, I think that a person can be yotze his obligation with Yarava in the lulav. Before I should point out, that means the second time you pick it up, not the first time. Everyone agrees the first time you pick it up, you can't be yotze, because then you're just being yotze arbaminin. But if you put it down and pick it up a second time, there is an opinion in the Gemara, which is Rav Chisda named Rabbi Yitzchak, that you can be yotze the second time you pick it up with the lulav. Okay, but remember, Rami said he didn't give us a shear. He said it requires a shear, but he never said what the shear was. So how much is this shiur? Amar Rav Nachman, Shlosha Badei Alin Lachin. Three grew, I don't know, really, bundles, but it doesn't mean bundles. It means three sticks of moist leaves. So a bad means like the stick. So you have three of them that have the leaves that are moist. Those are not dried out. So you need three. You need three. But Rav Sheisha, so Amar Rav Sheisha said, Afilu ale echad, even one leaf, ubad echad, and one branch. So, can you picture that? You have a leaf and a stick. You mean the stick doesn't have any leaves on it? That's what it sounds like. It sounds like there's no leaves on it. You have a leaf in one hand, and in your other hand, or the same hand, you have a stick with no leaves on it. That's what he said, right? One leaf, and one branch. But it doesn't sound like the branch has to have any leaves on it. Asks the Gemara, one leaf and one twig, you think? Ella, rather, Ema say, even if you only have one leaf left on the branch. So, wait a minute. According to that, that means he's just trying to say he agrees with three, but it has to have a leaf? Or it means one branch is enough with one leaf? So it sounds like it's a machlokas here. It sounds like the one opinion holds you need three, and the other opinion is you need one, but it has to have at least one leaf on it. This is just another example of the precision of the Gemara. I think on the one hand, a person would look at this Gemara and say, oh, that's ridiculous. On the other hand, what we need to remind ourselves about is that that's exactly the point. The Gemara is trying to point out to you that the precision here is you have to say things very precisely. If you want halacha to be passed down appropriately, you have to make sure you say it exactly the way it's supposed to be said, and your meaning is very clear. Amar Ibu. Rashi says Ibu was Rav's father. So Rav's father said, Ibu said, Havakamina Kame Rav Bar Tzadok. I was hanging out in front of Rabbi Elazar, the son of Tzadok, Va'asiyahu Gavra, and that guy brought a Rava, and a Rava Kamei in front of him. There are certain sources that say, whenever the Gemara says, Ahu Gavra, first Eliyahu Anavi. So, Rashi certainly doesn't point that out over here, but okay, whatever it is. Maybe it's Eliyahu Anavi, maybe it wasn't. There was that guy, and he brought in a Rava to Rabbi Elazar, Bar Tzadok, and Shakil, he took it. Chavit, V'loy barich. He did chavit chavit, and he didn't make a bracha. What in the world is chavit chavit? So Rashi says, Loshana ni anua. It's a language of shaking, of waving. So according to Rashi, chavit doesn't mean to hit it or to bang it. It means to shake it. So we'll go with Rashi. So he shook it, and he did not make a bracha. Why didn't he make a bracha? Kasabar, he reasoned, minig neviim hu, it is a minig neviim. That's where Rashi got it from. So this is it. This is where Rashi got it from. The Gemara is saying he didn't make a bracha because it's a minig. But if he had held it was yesoid neviim, then he would have made a bracha. So that's where all this comes from. So Gemara is saying that a minig doesn't get a bracha. Rabbeinu Tam insists it doesn't mean any minig. It means a minig that doesn't have a significant action to it. But that's a machlokes Ashkenazim starting out of Paschalim as well. Okay. Ibu, again, Rav's father Ibu. V'chizkia, v'nei bar say the Rav, and Chizkia, who was the son of the daughter of Rav. So what's the relationship between these two people over here? Ibu is Rav's father, and the son of the daughter of Rav. So what's the relationship? Who it would be his?
Rav's grandson.
Rav's grandson. So Ibu and his great-grandson, right? That's what it sounds like. Okay, so Ibu and his great-grandson. Aisu Arava Lekame to Rav. So they brought an Arava in front of Rav. Okay. Chavit Chavit, Vele Barich. According to Rashi, shook it, and he didn't make a bracha. Kasavar Minhag Nevi'im Hu, because he also held that it was a Minhag Nevi'im. Okay? Again, he was said that he was in front of Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok. Us the kameu gavra, and the same guy or another guy or the Onavi came in front of him. Amar lei, and he said to him the following: Kiryasa Isli, I have a village or I don't know several villages. Karmi Isli, I have vineyards. Zeis Isli, and I have olive. What do you call them? Orchards? Olive orchards?
Olive groves.
V'vasi b'nei kiryasa. And so comes along the people of the villages. Makashkishin b'karim maya. And they are makashkesh in my vineyard. What's makashkesh? So what does Rashi say? Oidrin esakramim b'shevias. They would, what's called oider, the vineyards during Shavuos. So Oder is one of the forbidden activities during Shavuos. It means basically to till the soil, to soften it up, to do whatever is necessary to allow the grapevines to grow properly. So you're not allowed to cultivate the land, you're not allowed to do anything like that, to weed it or to soften up the earth during Shavuos. So there's something really strange going on over here. Okay, so the story goes that this man came in front of Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok. And he said, I have all these villages, and I have vineyards, and I have olive groves. And what happens is, the people from the villages come, and they do whatever needs to be done in the vineyard to foster the growth of all of the grapevines. And they eat the olives. Why are they eating his olives? So the reason is, Zogt Rashi, as payment for their digging, their weeding, their tilling of the vineyard, and they're not mafkir, or he's not mafkir, the olives to the aniyim. So what's going on over here? So the case is, they have this fellow, apparently very wealthy, and he owns vineyards, and he owns olive groves. And basically, the deal is, whoever comes and works for me in the olive groves gets to come and pick, in the vineyards, gets to come and pick olives as payment. Great! So, if you like olives, or you want oil, or whatever, so it's a great way to get your olives and get your oil. So that's what people used to do. Problem is, that it was during Shavuos. So this fellow asked, Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok, Arich, Eloi, Arich. This is a very funny word, arich. It's not normal. Rashi has to chime in on this one. Rashi writes, arich, oiloi, arich. Toiv la'asais kein, oiloi. Is it good to do this or not? Rashi says, arich, lashon davar hagun. Arich is a language of, is it appropriate? Is it appropriate or not appropriate? So the word arich means appropriate. So then he quotes a pasuk that he says something very, very similar over there. So what did he answer him? He said, the question is it appropriate or inappropriate what I'm doing? Amar lei loy arich.
It's not appropriate.
Inappropriate. Now, why is it inappropriate?
Because
correct. So Rashi says, Amar lei loy arich lefisha ata pireya pu'ula sam. You are paying for their work mipere shvius, from shvius fruits. V'atayra amran, the Torah said, la'achla v'lay l'schayra, that you're allowed to do whatever you need to do to eat it, but you're not allowed to pick it, to harvest it for business purposes. But we'll see soon that the actual tilling, or whatever you want to call it, of the soil was not problematic, and that's why he didn't point that out. The only problem apparently was paying them with the olives. Halakashavik leivo azel. So this fellow that asked the shaila, he left and he ran away. That's what it sounds like. Shavik, he put it down. He put down his question and azel, and he went. So if you're standing there, what's your impression? Guy asks a question. The rav gives the answer to the shaila. The guy doesn't say a word, he just walks out. So what's your impression? He's probably mad. He's upset. Amar, so Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok said, Kidu, like this, Havisi Dairi Ba'ara Hada Memshinin. I have lived, right, like a dira, Dairi is to live. I've lived Ba'ara Hada, in this land, Mem Shinin, for 40 years. V'loy chamisi, I have not seen the Bar Inish, son of man, mahalech ba'urchan detaknin, that goes in the fixed ways, kedain, like this. What's he trying to say? He's like, I've been around here for 40 years. I've never seen a guy that has better derech of fixing his ways than this guy. He comes and asks the shaila, and he goes and he does what he needs to do.
So he wasn't mad, he was just going to fix his way?
Right. That was what his point was. That you might have the impression that he is running out mad. You're wrong. He got to go stop them from taking the olives. He's going to go fix whatever needs to get done, and he's not going to waste a second because he doesn't want to violate any avarias. He's mamash tzaddik, this guy. Okay, if you say so, Hadar v'asay, and sure enough, he came back. Hadar means he returned, v'asay, and he came in. V'amarle, and he said, back to Elizabeth Tzadik, my me'abit, what should I do? What do you mean, what should you do? What should you just go to do? And that's all he, let's just go to do. What he went to go do is stop them. But now he wants to know, what am I supposed to do in the positive? I mean, what is the correct mahalach? I froze everything. Now what? So that's just the proof that exactly, that was exactly on target. The guy went to, also, Dan Lekavschus, The guy was a big tzad. Okay, what should I do? Amar lei. Shabbat Tzor Tzadok said back to him, Afkir Zeisa Lechashuchaya. You have to be mafkir, the olives, to those who are in darkness, or I guess those who are having troubles. Nidaniyim. V'tein Pritaya Lechashkushay. Krum. And give a pruta is usually the smallest amount of money, but I don't know if he would meant pay them something or whatever he meant. But he meant basically pay them money to those who are kashkushe kramim, to those who are tilling, or whatever the right word is, for working the dirt, the field of the vineyard, the ground in the vineyard. Okay, so that's what you have to do. You have to pay them. You can't use your olives to pay them, because they have to be hefker to daniyim. Okay, so the Gemara goes back to the halachic issue here and says, "V'kashkushim mishari, to do this idur, to do this weeding and the tilling of the soil, mishari, who permits it? V'hatanya, but didn't we learn in a braisa, v'ashvias tisham tenemet unatashta, that you have to do two things during shvias? One is called shmita, and one's natashta. What do they both mean? So the Gemara explains, tishmitena v'lekashkesh. You have to leave it alone from working the ground, from tilling it, from weeding it and whatnot, from softening the earth and weeding it. milisakel. And you have to also refrain from doing something that's called skila. What's skila? What? Stoning. How do you stone a field? You clear the rocks away. That's how you remove the rocks so that the soil is good and you can work the ground. Because you bring a plow or whatever into the rocky area, you're going to break your plow and all kinds of things. So you stone a field by taking the rocks out. So you're not allowed even to remove the rocks from the field during Shavuos. That's part of the avoda that's prohibited during Shemitah. Amar Rav. Okay, so again, what's the kasha? The kasha is, why didn't Rav Elazar ben Tzaddik say anything about the Idur? The Kishkush is Asur. That's what we're saying in the Brice. It's very clear that anything you're doing to allow things to grow better, to be Mishabeach, your field, is totally prohibited. So what's going on? Why didn't he say anything about that? Amar of Ukva Barchama, Ruk Barchama said, Trei Kishkushe Havu. As Mamish Brisker, a Brisker Gemara. There are Tzvei Dinim in Kishkush. There are two types of Kishkush. Chad Stume Pile, Vechad Avruye Ilane. One is called Sasume Pile. Well, a pile sounds like an elephant, but that's not what it means over here. Sasum is to close off, right? Stuma? Listom? So Sasum is to close something off. What's Pile? So what does Rashi say? Rashi says, oh, by the way, Rashi milisakel, right? Stoning a field. Rashi writes, lahashlich avanim lachutz. It's called stoning because you're throwing the stones out of the field. Okay. But in any case, Rashi says, stume pile. Shahasharashim megulim. Sometimes the roots of the trees, in this case the vineyard, becomes revealed. V'tzarech lachasoysam shlo yavesha ilan. And so you have to cover the roots so that the tree, the vineyard, the vine, doesn't dry out. It's gonna die. Because once the roots become exposed, so then it's gonna die. Or at least part of it's gonna dry up. And so they are just, you know, doing whatever they need to do to the tree so that it doesn't die. They're not doing it in order to make it better, to improve it, to give it shevach, not to improve them. Just to allow them to continue, to maintain them, that is permissible, that is permitted. Pile, Rashi writes, is bika'im. A beka is literally like a valley, but it means like something that gets, something like an open hole, something that gets like exposed. So that's what Rashi says it means. So again, back in the Gemara, Shrei Kashkushi Havu, the two types of Kishkush. Chad Stume Pile, one is when you're doing something with the ground in order to cover the grooves, to cover over the exposed roots. V'chad avruye ilane. What's avruye and ilane? So ilane is the tree, avruye, so we're all assuming now, we know the difference between the two categories. What you're allowed to do is anything which is maintaining what's already there so it doesn't die, that you're allowed to do during Shemitah. What you're not allowed to do is anything that is beneficial that's going to improve it. But what do the words mean? Avruye ilane. Rashi writes, k'mo uvarisam b'charvusam, that they did something to them with their swords. Linkoiv, so it means to pierce. Linkoiva afar shalash harashem, to make holes in the dirt on top of the roots. Lahazizoi, and to move it. Sheyeh rach, so that the ground, the soil will be soft. V'tichoyach, and it'll be, you know, I don't know if there's any rach and tichoyach, but va'ilan mashpiach, and that will allow the tree to grow better. Kach shamati, that's what I heard. So in other words, Rashi's first explanation is that this word, ivruye, comes from the language of Pasuk in Ches Lachav Gimel, uvra, which means to pierce, like with a sword. Then Rashi has another explanation. Lishna Achrina, another language, is lahavri etza ilan ulahashbichoi. Lahavri here means to make it healthy and to improve it. So, okay, either way, there's a Rashi's two explanations what it means, ivruye. Either it means to make holes in the ground, or it means literally to make it healthy. So to keep it healthy, to maintain its health, is allowed. So Rashi here says that this means healthy in the sense that you're actually improving it. So lavruye ilani is prohibited during Shemitah, but any maintenance is permissible. Avruye ilani asur, stume pivei shari. To improve the tree is prohibited. To just block up, to close up any exposed roots, to maintain it, is shari, is mutter. Okay. So that's again, just to finish the story, so that's what was happening. When this fellow came in front of Rav Elazar Tzaddik, he was saying that we're not doing anything that's prohibited, we're just making sure that all the roots are covered. So that may be the rationale why he just allowed them to pick olives. It sounds like it's not necessarily a big payment, I don't know, the minimum wage. And he told them to pay them in prutos. Like, why are you paying such a minimal amount? So it could be because it wasn't really a lot of work. Maybe that was exactly how Rav Elazar Tzaddik knew that was what was going on, you know? Because if you're talking about tilling all the soil, I mean, that's a lot of work. That's going around every single grapevine and making sure the earth is soft. I mean, that's heavy duty work. They used to pick some olives? They're going to do that? I mean, who are these losers? You know, like, build a wall. Anyway, so...
Weren't they allowed to take the olives too, though? I thought because didn't he say as well that you should, what did he use the word for?
Chashuche?
Didn't he say that you also give them up?
To the aniyim. I mean, they're supposed to be available for aniyim to take. Technically speaking, they're all considered hefker.
That doesn't mean they can take it? I mean,
On a technical level, it means that anybody can really take it. It's just that what he was using them for was a deal. It was payment. If you do this, then you're allowed to take them as payment. It sounds like he wasn't letting other people take them. They were reserved for payment for these people, something like that.
Right, but if he pays them a very small amount, but then they're also allowed to take the olives, and it's like, then they're getting like double the amount in a sense.
No, but that's the thing. He's not allowed to tell them they're allowed to take the olives. The olives are hefker. It has nothing to do with it.
Right, which means they can't take it.
It has nothing to do with their work. No, but it's not related to their work. They can take it if they don't work. Anybody can take it.
I know, but the fact is it can be seen as payment anyway. Just because before they were getting paid with it. And
so that's what he's telling you. You can't like block off, you can't lock the fence, lock the gate to your olive groves, and then open them up as soon as the people are finished. But if it's open all the time, anybody can come whenever they want. So they can come whenever they want. Sometimes you can gain information from a shayla from the question. I may have told you this one before. I remember a friend of mine was telling me that he called up a certain rav to ask a shayla about a spoon. And he didn't know if the spoon was kosher or not because it was a fleshik spoon and had been used in milchiks to feed the baby, whatever. It was a spoon they were using to feed the baby. So they called up their rav and they said, we're using a fleshik spoon and we're feeding the baby, milchiks with it. And the rav said, it's mutter, no problem. Aren't you going to ask me, like, was it hot? Was it really, just like you were feeding the baby, right? Exactly. So he's like, he didn't right away. You know, like, this is not a shayla. No. Okay, anyway. Gemara then says, Amar Ibu, Yishum Rabbi Elazar Bar Tzaddik. He obviously was a very good Talmud, right? He has a lot of information he gave over from his Rebbe. Ayah Lechadam, Ba'ar Mishabas, Yisim Mishal Shaparsos. This halacha appears in Shulchan Aruch, by the way. They are not supposed to be traveling long distances on Erev Shabbos. So, how much is a parsa? The amount of time it would take to walk, I don't know, 18 minutes, something like that. So, Shulchan Parsos, what's 3 times 18? Okay, what's 3 times chai?
54.
So, we're talking about around an hour. If you're not supposed to be walking about an hour's distance on Erev Shabbos, shouldn't be walking more than around an hour to get to where you're going on Erev Shabbos. So the guy is either, we don't know the case. Is the guy leaving his home or is he going home? Is he somewhere else? He's just traveling. But apparently, wherever you find yourself on Erev Shabbos, you're not supposed to be doing any major traveling to get to where you're going to go. Amar Rav Kahana le'amarin ela leveise. The case where this halacha was stated is where he's basically an hour away from his house, and he's going to get to his house, exactly when it's going to be time for Shabbos. So when he arrives home, there's not going to be enough time to prepare a proper seuda for him because they didn't know he was coming. That seems to be what the gist of the Gemara is. Now, if you have a cell phone, you can let them know he's coming. So then, I guess that's not an issue. But in the time where they didn't have any way of informing them that he was coming, so he's not going to have a proper Shabbos. But if he stays where he is, so he'll be able to buy food, he'll be able to get whatever he needs to get, and he'll have a proper Shabbos. So it's a fascinating halacha. So a halacha in proper covenant on Shabbos is that you're not supposed to show up to a place, punk, on Erev Shabbos, where you're not going to be able to have a proper Seudas Shabbos. So you're going to have to stay where you are to make sure you can provide for yourself a proper Seder Shabbos. About Lushpize. But if you're going to go to a guest house anyway, so am I. Then you can. Then you can. So it's only if you're going home, there's not going to be anything prepared. But if you're just going, am I the nakit, samich. On that which he is holding or carrying, samich, he is allowed to rely on. In other words, he's not going to be any place anyway. So what's the difference if he stays where he is, or if he goes to the next guest house? Like, whatever he has, he's allowed to rely on whatever he has. Rashi says, he's not relying on the people to which he ends up staying at for Shabbos. He's carrying with him whatever food he has. So he's relying on whatever food he has. But if he's going home, then he's not going to have food. He's relying on that are going to prepare for him at home, and they may not. They know he's coming. So that's approach number one to this halacha. In other words, the approach is that he's not allowed to go home, but it's only home. It means if he's going someplace else, okay, because then hey, let him go. Vika de Amri, now those that say to a certain extent the opposite. Amr of Kahana, le nitzrucha el afilu, they say. No, this means even to his house. Even to his house he's not allowed to go. What does that mean? Rashi. That if he goes home, whatever he finds at home, if it's a lot, if it's a little, you know, at least it's his. And even then he's not supposed to go. For sure he shouldn't be going to some place that he's going to have to be a guest, because he may find absolutely nothing there. In other words, if he's going home, whatever he finds is all his food. So he'll put together whatever he needs to put together, you know. He'll have something, you know, it's his own house. But if he's going to go to a guest, maybe they'll mamash have nothing for him. So you should stay put and prepare for Shabbos wherever you are. So those are almost opposites, right? Is it that he's not allowed to go home? In Kal V'chomer, he's not allowed to go somewhere else? Well, he's not allowed to go home because he may not find nothing. But, you know, listen, you can rely on whatever you have now. What's the difference between what you have now and when you ever end up at the guest house? Amar Rav Kahana, but did he have the Uvda? Rav Kahana said, this mamash happened to me. I didn't even find what's called a kasa d'harsana. Kasa d'harsana means it was a certain type of fish that was like the bare minimum that you got to have l'kavod Shabbos. It's a great question. The Gemara often strings together statements from one person in the name of his rabbi. So if we're going to quote something in context, the Gemara won't leave it alone. It'll say, and there are a few other things we know from him also, and it strings them all together. I don't know if that's the best way to remember things, but that's how the Gemara does it all over the place. So that's just one of the reasons that you got to be a Baki in Shas to, you know, be able to pass in Hilchot Shabbos too. You got to know what's going on in the Gemara in Sukkah.
This isn't the only place where it's probably mentioned. It's probably mentioned in other places too. Like generally the Gemara actually repeats things in
this has nothing to do with Sukkah though. I mean,
correct. It's only here because it's part of this chain of Ibu in the name of Rabbi Elazar Rotzadik. It's a chain of Masaira. You know what I'm talking about?
I mean, in Kedushin it has something with Shabbos, but that's has to do with Kedushin also.
Yeah, because over there it was talking about the...
Getting married on Shabbos.
Yeah, the whole sugya about Hechsher, whatever, yeah.
Right, but you don't think this appears in Shabbos too? It probably does.
I don't think so. Not this specifically, I don't think so.
I don't think the Gemara
I don't see a cross-reference over here.
It doesn't show up duplicates, though.
Oh, the Gemara does have, sometimes when it gets into the topic, it'll quote the whole thing in several places. That does happen. But in this case, I don't think it's quoted in Shabbos. Anyway, but Kasar Harsana is basically the bare minimum of what a person has to prepare to look over Shabbos, that the Gemara says you got to do something like over Shabbos, even if it's only Kasar Harsana, even if it's just to have this type of fish. What type of fish is it? Zakt Rashi, Sa'uda Mu'etes. It's considered to be the bare minimum of a Sa'uda, Dagim Ketanim, little fishies, mituganin bekemach, that are fried with some flour, shuman shalahan, in their own brine. So, we're not all smacking our lips at this. We'd rather have sushi. But, in any case, apparently this was considered to be like, you know, the bare minimum version of like what you could get away with as some kind of delicacy for Shabbos. You know, it's fish, there is some, it's fried, that's nice, and it's got some flour in it, so I guess it's a little bit more filling also. I ended up going someplace and I didn't even have that for Shabbos. I guess I should have just stayed put and not continued to the guest to where I was going to stay for Shabbos because I ended up with less than I would have had I stayed put.
So is he making a ruling based off of his own experience? Is he saying that you shouldn't do this because it happened to me?
Well, the kind of the way the Gemara presents it is that the din is a din, and he's just saying, just FYI, this mamash happened to me that I ended up going to the place and
so
I ended up.
He did something even though it was a din.
Did he violate the din?
That's what it sounds like. That's why I was confused.
So the Orech Lanir asks his kasha. And he wants to argue that Mistama, he didn't violate the din. So let's say, what would be a situation where he would be allowed to do it? I don't know, let's say it was dangerous where a person was. You have to move, he has to move on, he can't stay there. You know, it's some kind of sakana. So for sure he would be allowed to proceed. And he's just pointing out that even though I didn't violate anything in terms of my going to the next city, just FYI, it turned out that Itaka didn't have anything for Shabbos. But it wasn't a violation of the din, because you never know why he ended up going. It could be he was allowed to go. Or he had to go, yeah. It's a good question. And finally, before we get to the next Mishnah, just a couple more lines. So our Mishnah had said, Mitzvah Lulav Keitzan, what is the Mitzvah of Lulav? And it described that they used to bring their Lulavim on Erev Shabbos to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Chazanim would arrange them on some sort of platforms or something like that. So the Gemara says like this, Tani Tano Kamei Rav Nachman. One of these Tanoim, they were experts in memorizing all of the Tanaic literature. So he was reciting his Mishnayos or his Braises in front of Rav Nachman. And he said, Sudarin al Gag Ha'itztabo. They arranged the Lulavim on the roof, Gag, Gimel Gimel, of the Itztabo, of this platform. Omar Le. So of course, if the Lulavim are on the roof, so they're in the sun. Amar le, so he said to the Tana v'chila, Yabshanu tzarech. The Gag? What, he needs to dry him out? Ela'ema, rather, you should say, in other words, correct your memorized text in your mind. Correct it. The way you memorize it is incorrect. Ema, you should say, Al Gav ha'itztaba, on the back of the itztaba. What is that supposed to mean? So that means that there were some kind of safsalim, some kind of benches that used to line around the Har HaBayis. Technically, if you're in the technical area of the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to sit. But they were, I guess, on the outskirts or far enough away, you're technically not inside or whatever it is. So they had these benches. And on those benches, on top of the benches is where they put all the lulavim. They didn't put them on the roof where they would actually get dried out. They put them someplace under the roof so that they would be shaded, but they were still on top of these platforms that were some kind of benches or something like that around the edges of Har HaBayis. Amar, Rachba, Amar, Rabbi Yehuda, Har HaBayis stav kaful haya stav lifnim mistav. That Har HaBayis was doubled, Rashi says, stav kaful, itztaba os makifos oso. There were these some kind of platforms that surrounded it. Itztabos acherim, and then other platforms, hekef lifnim mehekef, were surrounding on the inside of that circle of that area. So what's the point over here? So I'm not 100% sure. Maybe that's the point, is that you should know that the ones that are on the outside maybe were even considered to be far enough away people could sit. I don't know. We should leave that as a question and see if you see anybody that talks about it. But that's how the Gemara finishes, is that he just explains that these Itztabos and Har HaBayis, there were two rows of them. Ones that were closer in, and ones that were circling the outer rim of Har HaBayis. And we will stop there at the Mishnah Memhamah.